Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now, from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Welcome to the Steve Jones Show on this Tuesday afternoon. Great to have you with us. Penn State getting ready for Temple Saturday at Beaver Stadium. By the way, the Illinois game will be a noon kickoff for the Big Ten opener, September 29th at Memorial Stadium in Champaign. But first things first, Penn State and Temple Saturday at Beaver Stadium. Later in the show, we'll have excerpts from Bill O'Brien's teleconference that took place earlier today. And we'll also have the Big East teleconference with Steve Addazio. We'll hear from Steve Greer and Jamie Bestwick. Jamie Bestwick just back from London, by the way, where he was a commentator at the Olympic Games. We'll have Jamie on the show to talk about that experience and also about the Coaches versus Cancer event, reverse drawing at Medler Field at Lombardo Park, a Jaguar. 400 tickets at $350 a pop available. I know that Sean Carey and Drew Kelly, Sarah Bartlett, and Kevin Herr all got together to split that $350 fee with the idea if they win the Jag, they'll take it and on a rotating four-day basis, each one of them gets a shot to drive it. It's an interesting way of going about it, but, I mean, really, they all wanted to get involved and help out the cause. But that's coming up Thursday night. We'll hear from Steve Greer and Jamie Bestwick about that, plus Steve Addazio and Bill O'Brien on Penn State and Temple Saturday at Beaver Stadium. What a night last night, and we've had a lot of comments on our hotline, on the Lenape Solar hotline, dealing with our Monday night football team of Dick Hort, John Gruden, and Mike Tirico with Sarah Bartlett on the sidelines. They loved it. I can't blame them. We're trying to work it out for a full season run. We'll have somebody else joining us as a co-host on the show a little bit later as well. We'll get that. Up next, commentary on our new Monday Night Football team of Dick Hort, John Gruden, Mike Tirico, and Sarah Bartlett with Above the Noise with Dan Patrick.
This is Above the Noise.
One of the more significant figures in the history of the National Football League, and actually one of the more significant figures in the history of sports, passed away today. Steve Sable, who was a part of NFL Films, that his father, Ed Sable, of course, founded NFL Films. Steve Sable went to work for him in 1964. Steve Sable hosted many of the shows, but won 35 Emmys in his career in, I believe, six different categories, from writing to cinematography. They understood the art of the game. That's what the Sables did. And the father, Ed Sable, who was still alive, who was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame in Canton a summer ago, is somebody that is a critical figure in popularizing the National Football League and making it into art. Now there's, you know, and they created some great mythology along the way too. A lot of sports is mythology. And we all think that, ooh, something happens and we all think we know how it played out. Let's see, the frozen tundra. Hey, of course, when you hire John Facenda, we had a guy, the 1982 National Championship Penn State football team is being honored this weekend. It's the 50th year. Do you know who the narrator was of the National Championship video for Penn State?
John Facenda. That's
he goes
great.
To WPSX-TV. Goes to WPSX-TV, Bob Bartolomeo, one of the great guys, Bobby B, meets him at the door. He says, "Hello, Bob, I'm John Facenda."
You're like, right there, I'd be like, wow.
The entire lobby got chills. So, They get John Facenda to voice it. And the Sables treat the games as if they're movies. Now, some mythology does creep into this at times. Frozen Tundra. All right?
That's never been found in any NFL Films audio, though, has it?
Sure it is. The Frozen. Oh, yeah, no, that's where it comes from.
Okay, because there was a long discussion that it never happened. But.
No, it did. It's in there.
Oh, cool.
All right. But there's a reason why it froze. Do you know what the reason is?
It was below 32 degrees?
Nope. Well, you know, I mean, it was what, 15? It was 15 below zero. But you want to know why it froze the way it did? Why it was so slick?
I don't know.
It was so slick for this particular reason. Vince Lombardi was way ahead of his time. And he had coils and a heating system installed under the field at Lambeau. Modified, but still exists to this day. Well, they finally get to the moment they're going to play the Dallas Cowboys in the NFL Championship game, 1967. I think it was New Year's Eve. And he has them turn the coils on underneath the field. This is great. It's going to work. This is what I've been waiting for. That way, the field will be very much playable on game day. But they also cover the field. They also cover the field. When they do, condensation from the coils builds up underneath the tarp. The next word is whoops.
That takes all the magic out of it, though.
I understand that, you know, but, you know, see, you feel like I ruin your experience.
You do.
By telling the truth.
Listen, I don't want the truth. I want my version of the truth. It's much more entertaining. You want to tell me the things that I should know.
Okay, then we'll do it your way. You're really good at your job. All right. So what happened was they pulled the tarp off, and the condensation's now laying on the field, and it's 13, 15 below zero. It froze. That's why. The coils didn't work. Let's see. What was the other great myth? America's team. You want to know how Dallas got the name America's team? Okay. The Cowboys were very much like the current Atlanta Falcons at one stage. In the late 60s, early 70s, they were very much like, from like 1965 to 71, they were very much like the current Atlanta Falcons. And the Falcons are the only team in the NFC, you know, that have had a winning record in each of the last four seasons. But their problem is they have not advanced in the playoffs. That is where the Dallas Cowboys essentially were in the late 60s and early 70s. They were known as the team that could be really good in the regular season but could not break through in the playoffs. You know, they went to back-to-back NFL championship games, 66-67, lost both games, less than a touchdown to Green Bay, one in the Cotton Bowl and one at Lambeau, the one we just referenced. But then in 68, boom, one and done. 69, one and done. They get to 70. They had a scintillating playoff win over Detroit 5-0. Then they beat the Niners, then lost the Super Bowl. And again, the Cowboys' inability. That's three championship games they could not win. They lost that Super Bowl by 3 points to Baltimore. So each NFL film has a title to it. The Steel Curtain, you know, Tampa Bay looking to the future, you know, some mumbo jumbo, whatever, they come up with something. And so they're trying to come up with a name for the Dallas Cowboys. I think it was the 1970 when they lost Super Bowl V. They're trying to come up with a name for the video. And they said as they were going around the country following the Cowboys, the one thing that everyone noticed that there were always a lot of Cowboy fans wherever they played. It didn't matter whether it was Kansas City, New England, the Giants, Browns, whatever it happened to be, there were always a lot of Cowboys fans there, no matter where they played. Now, we see that today the way the Steelers go. The Steelers play at Arizona. It's two-thirds Steeler fans. They play at Tampa Bay. It's at least half Steeler fans. Steelers travel really well. Certain teams travel well. Green Bay travels well. The Steelers travel well. The Giants travel well. Well, they needed to come up with a name for another disappointing year for the Cowboys. They had lost the Super Bowl. It was the third title loss in five seasons for Dallas, the team that couldn't get over the hump. So this one of them said, why don't we just refer to them as America's team? That's how that came about.
I think the thing that I always associate Steve Sable and NFL Films with the fact that they were able to use everything they have was like a classical music piece, and it seemed to fit with the NFL video that they had.
But even that was a struggle. They had to convince people and had arguments with people that it worked.
Oh, I understand. It's just the amazing thing is it does. And even though they've done new stuff over the last several years, it's always the John Facenda stuff because of the voice, but always the music that we go back to. I mean, how many ringtones do people have? I have one. I have one myself that has an NFL Films ringtone.
I'm sure you do. So, yeah. That's amazing. And he passed away today at the age of 69. They had found a tumor on the left side of his brain 18 months ago, in March of 2011. And in fact, if you notice, when his father was inducted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame a little more than a year ago, he wheeled his father onto the stage, but you notice that at the time, Steve Sable was completely bald. And that was, of course, from the surgery and the subsequent treatments. So,
I'm just still trying to find. I had always heard that from somewhere that the frozen tundra was a myth that never actually was said. So I'm searching all over to try and find it. I think it's in the story of the ice bowl video, but I'm not sure.
Yeah. So. So a significant loss for the NFL. Now the officials. Wow. That's something else. We're going to have a long discussion about that coming up. Sunbury Motors Studio, 4th Street, Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Key, routes 11 to 15, Hummel's Wharf. And, of course, the Let It Be Solar hotline open at 1-800-795-9565. Barty and the news next on News Radio 1070 WKOK. And here in the Sunbury Motors Studio, Steve Greer, Kent Weibel, and Jamie Bestwick. Yesterday, by the way, we had Pat Chambers on the show, a basketball coach of the Nittany Lions, talking about coaches versus cancer. The event will take place Thursday night at Medler Field at Lebrano Park. Much to your chagrin, Mr. Greer, we talked to Coach Chambers yesterday.
Where was I?
Where were you? Well, who'd you bring with you today?
Oh, I brought Kent Weibel, Executive Director for Coaches versus Cancer, and Jamie Bestwick.
Hello.
Hello. President of Bestwick Foundation.
He didn't really know what to say after that. It was I brought him, the English guy over the way.
The Brit?
No. Jamie Bestwick says it all, right?
I'll say this, though. I thought it was really nice of Greer to donate his car.
You know, I've been trying to nudge him for the past couple of years. I mean, who doesn't want that black Jaguar that he puts no miles on a year sitting in his garage? It could go to the community of State College and do some good.
He makes his daughter wax it all the time, and it goes nowhere.
I thought it was his wife. She's a dab hand at karate, too.
Well, I just like listening to him talk.
I know. Well, now he does wax on, wax off. It's really great.
You guys should see it on the radio. You should see it.
Yeah. Well, just visualize.
Yes, yes. Visualize Brian typing.
Tweeting.
Oh, you're tweeting? What are you tweeting now?
That we have wonderful guests in the studio to save me from sitting here all day with you alone. I beat you to it.
We're the real heroes here, huh?
Well, let's talk about this because there are only 400 tickets available at $350 a shot. It turns out seven people here got together at $50 a piece to get one. That way they'll drive the Jag once, like each one gets a day.
That's
a pretty sweet deal.
Yeah, it's a sweet deal. I mean, but it has to come out of your garage.
That's what we got going. And ticket sales are going well. We have we're having a meeting up at the stadium today, a little walkthrough meeting. We burst through 300 this morning, and the last 2 days, Steve, as you know, the tickets dwindle in, and the last 2 weeks we just hit it hard, and we're hoping to sell everything that we can out there. It's been going very well.
Yeah, I think through the end of last week we were roughly 40 tickets ahead of at the same time last year. Yeah. So we're expecting a very nice crowd this year again.
Yeah. And again, 350 is the top off. That's the limit right there. So you have a 1 in 350 shot. And by the way, say you don't want the car, you can go with the cash of $30,000.
Not bad.
Which is
and a dinner date with Steve Greer.
Yes.
The man.
Is that a win-win?
Again,
it was the silence then. It was like, oh, my gosh, do you really get to go out to dinner with Steve Greer? I know you're thinking about buying another ticket.
I'm thinking about the
$30,000. Well, listen, though, as we all say, if you think you're going to win the car or walk away with the prize and you're really intent on doing that, you're probably not going to have a good time. But if you're going there for the cause – and for the party, and for the camaraderie, and the event, if you can't have fun at this party, you don't know where to have fun.
It's something I've had fun at.
Somebody will walk away with $30,000 or the car, though.
Or the car, exactly right. And again, he's right. This will be the seven. I've been to all seven, and you have to have a great time. Danny Rollis will be catering once again. Yep. He'll be at the Med.
We have people falling out of the sky.
We don't want to talk about your pregame regimen. Kent, what do you have over there for us?
Well, tickets are still available, and they can be had at cvcpennstate.org or the bestwickfoundation.org, or you can call 234-1023 and get one of those last few tickets, as Steve mentioned. And like you said, great time, good food, good music, good company. Good evening.
If available, are there walk-up tickets available?
Yes.
Okay, so you can go to the event, and if you still have some, because you're under 50 now, but still if you have some left on Thursday night.
Yes, walk up, it would be a check only, I think, at that point.
We'll take anything. We'll take the shirt off your back. It's a good cause.
As long as it's a nice shirt. In medium, 42.
Yeah, it's very nice. Very nice. Well done, yes. And this is also a split with the Bestwick Foundation. Right. In fact, and the Bestwick Foundation is a 100% charity. In other words, every dime that goes directly to somebody.
Yeah, it's all community based. We, we really want to be a support network for this area. There's a lot of good people in this town and in the surrounding community, and we want them to feel like there's a place to go, because everybody has times of need. And everybody has those low spots, and that's why we set the foundation up. You know, Steve Greer, he's a tremendous example of somebody being, put in one of those positions when he was diagnosed with cancer. But people came to his aid and to his rescue, and we want to do that same honor in return. You know, it's, like I say, there's some phenomenal people in this town, and this is a great area. You know, it's a lot of sports, a lot of fun, and we just want to add more and more fun events to it.
And just so everyone knows, in the previous 6 years, this particular event has raised $175,000, just this event alone. Right. It's made a big difference. And again, the idea is to put the money directly toward somebody and not just go toward an organization.
That's right. And speaking for on the CVC side, mm-hmm. The money's earmarked for the Hope Lodge.
Yeah.
And which is, as you know, the what is it, Kent, 75-80% of the beds down at the Hope Lodge hold people from the center region.
Yes.
And yeah. And it's I get chills thinking about it because I spent 9 months down there, and it's something that we earmark, CVC and the Bestwick Foundation earmark as one of those organizations, institutions that we're going to continue to help, because we have so many of our own neighbors, friends, family living down there while they beat this thing, and we are going to beat it.
You can talk about it from a personal point of view. What did it mean?
You know, Steve, when you're down there and you're able enough to get out of the hospital and not have to go to a hotel, not that they don't have nice hotels down there, but you have a family setting and you have support there, and it's directly across from where you're going to be having treatment. It just means the world. And you go there, and there's this whole support system there, and there's people who you'll be struggling with and fighting with that are there, and you commiserate together, you laugh together, you cry together, but you're there. And you're not in a hospital. You're not in a hospital setting. You're there. You have your own room. You have your own shower, and the rest of it is community-based. But the support's there. You can have visitors come in. You can have as many visitors as you want to come in there. And it's very important. And Jamie and I just had lunch with representatives from Mount Nittany. And until we can have our own Hope Lodge up here,
right,
we're going to continue contributing down there. That's been one of the things that Kent and I have been real big on doing, and we want to continue doing that.
Now, this is an adult version of a Ronald McDonald House.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
And Ronald McDonald Houses, as you know, I know.
Right. You live there.
Yeah, I've lived at Ronald McDonald Houses. I've lived at Yawkey House. I know that part of it. And for your family, it had to be absolutely invaluable. Not just you, but for your family, it had to be an invaluable experience, A, that you were there, but they could be there too.
And when I'm not there, when the patients aren't there, when they're over at the hospital, the family can stay there. There was weeks at a time when I had to stay at the hospital, which all the patients have to.
Yes.
But their family can stay there. And the American Cancer Society and Coaches Versus Cancer being a big part of that. They support that, and you can go through tens of thousands of dollars worth of your own money if you live in a hotel for 9 months. You know, it's that plus the emotional support of having a place to go that people are going to welcome you and know what you just went through that day. It's
invaluable.
Precious.
It's invaluable. Yep. Have to ask you how the line. I watched you. I thought you did a tremendous job on the broadcast. I mean, really, I enjoyed it very much. So what was the experience like for you on the broadcasting end of it in London?
Being at the Olympics in my home country was pretty phenomenal. Yeah. It was, you know, it's great to see a country as small as England put on a sporting event that not only England was proud of, but I think the entire world just looked at that as, you know, a pretty much a benchmark from here on out. I mean, they really went above and beyond everything they did. And to be a part of NBC's broadcast team, it was an opportunity of a lifetime. I mean, I can't say that, you know, I was around, you know, Michael Phelps and all the athletes 100% of the time. But I did share an elevator ride with Al Roker. Yeah. So take your pick, you know, Al Roker, Michael Phelps. I'm going with Al Roker. Yeah. So he knows the weather. Michael Phelps only knows it's going to be wet for 99% of his day.
Yes.
So, you know, it was such a fun experience. It was great. It was a chance to see gold medals being won. Obviously, from my perspective, I would have loved to seen more action sports in there.
Sure.
But I think the representatives that we did have in there, BMX racing and mountain biking, did such a tremendous job of showing the world something that they already knew, that these sports are exciting, they're the future, and to be totally honest, you know, you're never going to see Usain Bolt miss a step and fall flat on his face in the 100 meters dash.
Right.
You know, somebody isn't going to bang into somebody in a 400 meter race. But you can almost guarantee in the BMX racing, somebody was going down in that first corner. And everybody loved it. You know, we got the Prime Minister of England out for the finals, David Beckham. There was all these, you know, A-list people. And it was the hot ticket. And it was a proud moment for me.
I'm hoping that it opens the door now for more, the way it came off.
Me too. You know, I hope Mr. McQuaid just kind of looked at that and saw that, you know, it brought a different demographic to the Olympics. I mean, these are youth sports, and that's what the youth of today are doing, you know, and they want these in the Olympics. They want something that they can relate to. You know, not everybody can relate to power walking.
Right.
Or, you know, a lot of the gymnastic events where they're using hoops and
the rhythmic
ribbons,
gymnastics, synchronized, you know, swimming, things like
most
that.
Most people can't relate to those, but I'm pretty sure there's not too many families in the United States or even in, you know, most parts of the world where their kids don't have a skateboard or a bike, you know, or a scooter. They're involved in some way of going out and riding some kind of other vehicle versus a traditional stick and ball sport. So for me, it was really neat to see that come across so well, and I think everybody involved did a fantastic job.
Yeah, one final question on that. One thing that seemed to come through as you were watching, not just what you were broadcasting, but virtually every sport, was the enthusiasm in the stands for the United Kingdom British athletes. I mean, everyone has always had the picture of crowds of being like Wimbledon. And even at Wimbledon, when Andy Murray beat Federer for the gold medal, it was a different crowd. Did you sense that it was a different feel among the British crowd for sports in which they were participating extremely well in?
Well, they weren't eating strawberries and champagne at the Olympics. I mean, that's pretty much Wimbledon in a nutshell there.
Strawberries and cream.
You know, I grew up on English soccer.
Yeah.
And, you know, you can get 113,000 people packed in Penn State, but you can get 40 packed in into a Premier League team. And for some bizarre reason, everybody knows the words to the song. And some of these songs are quite complex, so it wasn't... And a lot of them are kind of derogatory towards, you know, the referee on the pitch. But, you know, it's... That's sport in England. But it wasn't any surprise to me that when England started doing well at the Olympics, that the entire nation was just in such approval of our sporting athletes. I mean, the national newspapers were printing sideburns on the front covers of the newspapers so people could cut them out and stick them to their faces in honor of Bradley Wiggins, the Tour de France winner this year. So, you know, if he'd have lost, maybe it would have gone the other way. Maybe they'd have printed a turnip on the front page and you'd wear the turnip on his head. But, you know, it's that kind of support. And I'm sure when the Olympics come back to America at some point, you know, you yourself will be able to see that kind of camaraderie. For 2 or 3 weeks, the entire nation loves each other. And it's like time seems to stand still because nothing is important other than willing your country on to greater things and to win more gold medals. And just to be in that limelight for that short period of time, it's a big deal for any country.
And now back to our primary purpose. And the primary purpose that we brought everyone in was, of course, about 6 to 10 Thursday night, Medler Field at Lobrano Park, a chance to make a difference because, obviously, every family is touched by this.
Yeah, he might have a role in sports casting.
Oh, I told him. I watched. But I thought he did a fabulous job.
And not to get away from the event, but that enthusiasm he brings it to the table on all the events that we have, and that's a good marriage that we have here. Yes, and it's going to be a fun time. You know, it's going to be a fun time. We don't do anything that's not fun.
No, that's right. I know that.
And we're looking forward. We like the mix of CVC and support from CVC that we're getting, and likewise, it's reciprocal. So it's going to be good. We're looking forward to it. Pure Cane Sugar's playing. Tommy Wareham's playing. Plus all Danny's food.
So it's all good.
And the blue band.
The blue band is going to be there. And the possibility that Weibel might drive your car.
Maybe. To get it onto the field. Maybe.
Yeah, sure.
Somebody's got to break it in from Steve.
Nice touch. You know, you've never done an oil change on it, have you?
No. What's that?
You know. It's brand new. It still has the stickers on it. So there's no need for an oil change just yet.
He told me it knocked a little bit at 150. All right, so.
Guys. That's kilometers per hour, by the way.
Exactly.
So, you know, just in case any law enforcement are listening.
Yes, we've converted everything over because he's here.
Brian can't wait to switch back.
Phone number one more time.
234-1023.
And if any tickets are available, you can get them at the gate. Check, or as Greer now says, any means possible. That's right. Yeah. So over 300, 350 will be the cutoff, and then we'll go from there.
All right, buddy.
Yep. Steve. Ken.
Thank you.
Thanks,
Jamie. Thanks so much.
Thank you very much.
Okay, come back with more after this. Back then, it was controversial. Like, you can't put music underneath football. You can't do it.
Now I can't imagine it not happening.
Exactly.
Matter of fact, I've been to youth football games for years, and I can't tell you how many people or how many different youth teams for their warm-ups have NFL Films music playing.
Right. No, that happens all the time. Steve Sable passed away today, age of 69, 18 months battling a brain tumor. Credit with helping revolutionize sports broadcasting, making the NFL the country's most popular sport. NFL Films president Steve Sable dying of brain cancer 69. 4 years ago, he talked with passion about televised football.
What we've done is taken what every real football fan feels when he goes to a game, the excitement, the passion, and we, through our filmmaking, have amplified it and magnified it and intensified it.
Did all that and more, without question. A big loss in the National Football League. They owe a debt of gratitude to what he was able to do. And his father was the leader, of course. Let's see. Bill O'Brien, notes from today's teleconference. Praise Stephen Obeng Archibong for his best game against Navy. Daquan Jones doing well. Says he needs to do a better job of getting the plays in quicker and calling better plays. I mean, you can put it on yourself all you want, you know, but that's not completely true.
He does know he won, Krause, right?
Hmm?
But
you know what? He puts a lot on himself to deflect where there might be another issue. And that's the kind of coach I want. I mean, there are too many coaches I hear across the country where it's like, he did this, he did that, da-da-da-da-da. I mean, it's like Lane Kiffin was laying it on Matt Barkley the other day, you know, about the two worst decisions he's ever seen him make in 3 years, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, okay, yeah, tremendous. Good for you. Let's see. He says, crowd, student body have been awesome, and blew outs this weekend. Due to injury, a lot of guys are day-to-day, but feels good about the backfield situation. Day-to-day includes Belton and Derek Day. I think Derek Day is going to make it this week. Wide receiver is not concerned with Mosby Felder, Kenny, Christian Kuntz, Trevor Williams. They're all making improvement. At this point, Naeem Wortman is not playing right now, but he has a knee injury and says punting and kicking hasn't been great, but special teams unit overall good. And Mike Hall is, quote, a true Penn State linebacker. Let's see. Said Paul Jones should have played more in the game. Has improved a tight end. And that Kyle Carter's a playmaker, and you can see that right away. So there you go. They play Saturday, 3:30 Beaver Stadium. We're on beginning at 2 o'clock outside the Jordan Ticket Center. Fresh off his Monday Night Football debut, Kevin Hurd talks in the second hour.